and gentlemen, your attention, please.
To Chicago now, where teachers in the nation's third largest school district walked off the job today. City says it can't afford what the teachers want.
Synchronize your watches.
I don't know how to do that.
I don't wear a watch.
I thought I was losing my mind. What the heck? Is that Pete?
Here's Pete McMurray on 720 WGN.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. Boy, do we have a Thursday show planned for you. Coming up at 11:05, we'll talk to singer Dionne Warwick. She's got a new Christmas album out. She is going to join us. Singer John Vincent. You know, Johnny sings at Ditka's. Lots of news about Ditka's losing their lease. Johnny may be leaving. He'll tell his story at 10:35. But first, the big story, of course, the Chicago teachers. 25,000 Chicago teachers and support staff went on strike today. Both sides still seem very far apart from making a deal. We'd like to welcome back to the show the former head of the Chicago Public Schools. It's Paul Vallis. Paul, thanks for joining us. I know you're out on the East Coast staying up to do the show. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I wanted to give you an update on the strike. The CPS put in writing today a proposal that addresses class size, and that was one of the sticking issues. They wanted nurses, they wanted librarians, which is support, and of course, they wanted smaller class size. What are your thoughts on all of this going on?
Well, look, class sizes need to get smaller, and I think the schools do need additional support staff, but you know, there's different ways of providing additional support staff too. For example, when they talk about having nurses in every school, well, what about partnering with hospitals or clinics? Why not partner with the medical institutions to provide nursing care and things like that? So the question is, how much flexibility are the schools going to be able to have? But the point that I want to make is, you know, I think the reason that the mayor was resisting writing a class size into the contract, or for that matter, writing support positions into the contract, was because of the realities of the current budget situation. You know, what is going to happen? What's going to happen if the Pritzker constitutional amendment fails and he doesn't get his progressive income tax increase?
All right.
What happens if the state budget that is built on what I call, you know, sin and addiction taxes, like cigarette taxes, mm-hmm. and we're going to tax legalize cannabis, and we're going to expand casino gambling, and we're going to do sports betting? Well, those are all improving revenue sources. What if those revenue sources don't produce the revenue that they're projecting? What if the economy slows? What if the economy slows and the natural revenue growth begins to slow significantly again? What's going to happen? Education is going to take a hit.
Right.
And if education takes a hit, what'll happen two years from now?
Well,
what are you going to cut? Yeah, are you going to ask the teachers to give back part of their pay increase? Are you going to ask them to delay getting their automatic step increases? You see, so you know, I think what the mayor was trying to do was to maintain that flexibility and don't lock in these costs into the contract, because mm-hmm. again, you know, the state's budget is a perilously balanced budget, dependent on a lot of questionable new revenue sources, and of course, dependent on a progressive income tax that is yet to be approved via change in the Constitution by the voters.
Right. We're talking with Paul Vallis. He used to run the Chicago Public Schools. Let me give you my take, and you can correct me or add to it.
I won't correct you.
16% raise for the teachers, Paul, is very generous, in my opinion. I am all for the teachers. I fully support them, but I think Jesse Sharkey and the teachers union, they're trying to flex their muscles here, and I think their intention was to go on strike.
Yeah, you know, I felt that too, and you know, and people who I know in the system felt that from the beginning. You know, that they really wanted to kind of, you know, they really wanted to show who was boss. You know, they had a new mayor coming in,
right?
And look, she not only not only accepted the arbitrator's proposals, but she actually sweetened those proposals. Because you have to remember, it's not only a 16% salary increase, it's also the automatic step increases. So for many teachers, the increases are going to be 20, 25%, even more during the five-year period. And who's getting those type of increases these days? Now, I'm not saying that teachers don't deserve to get paid well, and I believe they get paid well. It's an incredibly difficult job. It's challenging. Their description of some of these classroom challenges, those descriptions are very, very legitimate. And you also have to remember that this is also a union that's been clashed with Emanuel for 8 years, and we're forced to make concessions on things that they had negotiated through contracts in the past. They had to live through initiatives like Renaissance 2010, which closed 100 schools and converted them to new schools and displaced not only students but many teachers, and of course the school closing. So clearly there's a lot of animosity that's been built up. But Lori Lightfoot is not Rahm Emanuel.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what I thought this week. I'm like, they're not mad at Mayor Lightfoot. They're mad at Rahm Emanuel.
And I submit to you that if Tony Prinkwinkle were mayor, she probably would have been less accommodating than Lori was. Because if you look at the contract settlements that Prequickle negotiated with the county, they're more conservative than what's on the table. So I really think it's been unfair. I mean, she's wrestling with a massive city budget deficit that she's trying to address. People forget that 2 years ago, the city raised property taxes $500 million. That's
right.
$500 million. To what? To fund the teacher's retirement system.
Yeah.
They put $500 million into the system. That's the city putting $500 million into the system. Incidentally, no other school district in the state gets funding from the city for their retirement systems. So the bottom line here I think what she offered them was a very reasonable proposal. There was no need to have this show of force. I really think that in many respects that they were just trying to show who was boss.
Right.
And I think it's a real shame because, look, why wait until the fourth week of the school year to strike? I mean, we negotiated all of our contracts before the beginning of the school year. And we always said that if we did not have a contract negotiated by the start of the school year, then we wouldn't be negotiating during the school year.
Right.
But they waited until October 17th.
You know why.
Eighty-five percent of the kids come from our Title I kids. That means they come from families that live at or below the poverty level. They're heavily dependent on free and reduced school lunch. The majority of the children, the Title I children, come from single family households, meaning their parents or their parent at home can't afford to take the day off to take care of their child. If you say you're four kids, you don't strike. You don't shut school down.
They knew. You're right. They knew exactly what they were doing. Paul, I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk to you after the break. I'm going to ask you, if the strike extends into next week, who does it hurt more? Does it hurt the teachers' union or the mayor? Because the mayor is going to be unveiling her budget next week. We're talking to Paul Vallis, who is the former head of the Chicago Public Schools. We'll get more with Paul coming up next at 720 WGN.
We need to have the tools that we need to do our jobs in our schools. That's extremely important. We need to have pay and benefits that give us dignity and respect. Mayor wants a five-year contract. Most marriages in this country, or many marriages, don't last 5 years. And I don't like this contract enough to marry it.
That is Jesse Sharkey. He is the head of the Chicago Teachers Union. On the phone with us, the former CEO of the Chicago Public School is Paul Vallis. Paul, here's the question. If there is no deal by Sunday and the strike extends into next week, it adds pressure to both sides, but who does it hurt more, the teachers union or the mayor, who is delivering? The mayor, of course, is unveiling her first city budget next week. You tell. There you go, Paul.
I really think it hurts.
Go ahead.
I really think it hurts the mayor because, you know, people want it resolved. And when you're dealing with the union, you're dealing with, this is a much larger association. And the mayor is really the point person on the part of the city. So I think it really puts her in a jam. I believe that she's in the right. I think she's offered them a very generous proposal. I think she wants a 5-year contract because people have to remember that since 1979, the school district has lost, I think it's 175,000 students. And since 2004, it's lost 76,000 students. The only time period since 1979, when the school enrollment was at its peak, the only time period that there was growth was 1995 to 2001, when it grew by 30,000. That just happened to be my 6-year tenure. But why the aberration? Well, the aberration was because there was stability. We negotiated collective bargaining agreements a month before the existing agreements expired. We worked to get the additional resources in the classroom. We worked to give people reasonable raises while at the same time, not nickel and diming them on other expenses. The schools need stability and continuity and predictability.
Right.
So the teachers know what the resources they have in the classrooms. The kids know that schools are going to open in a timely manner. Parents can make their plans. When that happens, the school district grows. And the danger that you have when you have this type of friction. And the mayor just got elected. I mean, we can all appreciate the challenges that she's facing, for heaven's sakes. To offer such a reasonable deal and then just have them kick sand in her face, so to speak.
Right.
And go on strike. I just think is blatantly unfair, and it's really the type of bullying that we don't need to see among our collective bargaining units. But the point to make here is if the school district continues to lose enrollment and strikes, financial uncertainty, financial unpredictability, the lack of continuity, that all impacts parents' thinking when determining where to send their kids to school. That happens, the schools lose money. So all the financial gains that have been made in the last couple of years, particularly the last year with the new funding formula, pumping new money into the schools,
yep.
Well, great. You know what's going to happen? You're going to lose enrollment. Those financial gains are going to be lost because you're going to continue to lose 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 kids a year.
Well, Paul, let me ask you this. You are the former head of the Chicago Public Schools. They want smaller classes. How do you deal with class size? Paint a picture for me. What are you doing here? Do they want more schools? Do they want more teachers in schools? How do you deal with class size?
Well, let me just say, look, you've got to have smaller class sizes. And there's a couple ways to do that. One is to look at the number of teachers you have now and make a determination as to whether or not those teachers are being deployed efficiently and effectively. I mean, you know, are all the teachers in the classroom who could be in the classroom? You know, so you've got to look at your staffing models and how you're allocating additional resources. Now, I'm not suggesting that there's not enough teachers, but I'm saying that's got to be part of it, too. And obviously, that's for the superintendent or for the CEO, CEO Jackson, or leadership team to make those determinations.
Right.
But secondly, we all agree as new money becomes available from Springfield, and again, the big increase they got in funding this year under the new, much more equitable formula, if they get a few more years like that, I mean, they'll be able to begin to reduce class size and to hire more support staff. But I think the mayor was always willing to do that, revenues permitting. I think what she didn't want to do is to be handcuffed.
Right.
Because you just don't know what the state budget's going to be next year or the following year. Are they going to pass the progressive income tax increase?
Right.
Are these revenues, the cannabis and the gaming revenues and the sport betting revenues going to generate the
yes,
money?
Yes, you have no idea where this money is coming from. Absolutely,
exactly,
I agree.
Exactly. What are they going to do 2 years from now? I mean, what? Look, the state still hasn't even begun to address the issue of the unfunded pension liability.
Right.
So nothing in that budget is addressing the state's long-term pension obligations. So what happens if suddenly 2 years from now we start getting budgets like we experienced under Governor Rauner, and suddenly they're either not increasing state funding for education or they're even potentially cutting it? What are you going to do? You're going to go back to the teachers? You're going to close more schools? You're going to have to lay people off? You're going to have
to provide salary and get back?
That's the point.
There is a lot of what-ifs in there, and you're right. To go back to what you said earlier, and I agree 100%, the teachers union is mad at Rahm Emanuel, and the thing is with Lori Lightfoot, she is an attorney. She takes the emotion completely out of it. Rahm was a very emotional mayor. She is emotionless. She is all about the facts. She wants to get this done. Here's what we have. We don't have a secret chest filled with money. This is what we have. Let's work together and find common ground.
You know, you also have to understand that you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I can't fault her at all because she just came in. I mean, she walks through the door. She discovers that the city's budget deficit is probably about $200-300 million higher than she had projected. She's got all these collective bargaining agreements conveniently ending right now.
Right, of course.
Obviously, and then she gets this, hit with this strike. Something she absolutely did not need. And look, I'm not criticizing the teachers. I have and will never criticize teachers. Teachers are heroes.
Yep.
I agree 100%.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is a leadership deficiency here, and they should have been more reasonable and been more accommodating. You know, because I think she is committed. You also have to understand that this is not the old school board, and I know the union wants an elected school board, things like that, but she appointed a school board that is far different from the school boards that have been appointed in recent memory. And she made as president of the school board Miguel DeValle. And he is, you know, if you want a progressive to be president of the school board,
oh, yeah.
You can't pick a better progressive than Miguel DeValle. You can't pick a better advocate for the community, better advocate for teachers, a better advocate for the kids, a better supporter of unions than Miguel DeValle. So this is not the old guard. This is a fresh group and they want to do a good job and they just need a little cooperation.
It's going to be interesting how this plays out. I hope there is a deal by Sunday. Paul Vallis, the former CEO of the Chicago Public Schools. Paul, thank you so much for coming on. It's good to hear your voice.
It's my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
All right, it's Paul Vallis, everybody. It's 720 WGN. News is next. God, what's not to love about that voice? It's Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios on 720 WGN. Our next guest is a great friend, one of the most sincere people I know. He's got a voice just like Frank. You better hurry up and see him at Ditka's because sounds like he's leaving. It's our good friend, John Vincent. What the heck is going on?
Well, thank you for having me here, first of all. I appreciate it.
It's great to see you.
It's great to see you, too.
Always in a good mood. You bring the happy energy to the radio station. I love it.
Fake it till you make it, right?
I see on the news last week that Ditka's losing their lease, and I hear that you're moving on.
Yeah, I don't really know if that is 100% correct. I mean, I think they're still trying to work a deal out.
Okay,
from what
good.
I understand.
That's a Chicago institution.
Absolutely. And it is my second father's birthday tomorrow. Mike Ditka turns 80 tomorrow.
The big 80.
The big 80.
Wow.
And I've been with him for 18 years and text him today and I'll talk to him tomorrow, sing him happy birthday. And I started there a long time ago, and God, he's been such a great mentor, friend.
You love the guy.
So, I love him.
Take me back 18 he's years awesome. Ago when you got hired. Did Ditka do it or did somebody else? And tell me the point when you met Coach Ditka for the first time.
The first, you know who hired me? Mrs. Ditka.
Really?
Yeah. I go in there, and they wanted me to, like, say, you know, there's this guy, he's trying to do Sinatra, we're going to give him a shot. And she goes, sing New York, New York. And I go, okay, let me hook my stuff up. And she goes, no, right now, a cappella. So I was so nervous. I sang it a cappella. She goes, he's hired. And that's a true story. That's a true story. So they gave me like a 4-month deal.
A 4-month deal?
4-month deal when I first started.
Is that normal?
A year? I don't know. A 2-year. And that, well, because it was in August. So they hired me for the busy season.
Okay.
September, October, November, December.
Yep.
And then we'll see what happens from
Makes
there.
Makes sense.
Then it was a year, 2 year, and then I've been there for, it was 18 years. It was like a lifetime contract there for like 18 years. And when I first met Coach, it was him, Steve McMichael, Mrs. Ditka, and Misty McMichael, and I was so nervous singing in front of all of them. I was so, so nervous. Like, yeah, I was like freaking out. Freaking out.
Did you know that he was coming to the restaurant?
I did.
Okay.
I did, because it was a Thursday night when they had preseason games on Channel 5 with the Bears, and Coach was announcing them.
Okay.
We were waiting. Mr. Dicker was already there.
And you're sweating. You're thinking about it all day.
I was freaking out. Yeah, absolutely. I was really, really scared.
When you get nervous, your throat clogs up.
It does.
So what do you do for that? How do you relax it?
I don't know.
You just start singing and belting it out?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. You could hear it, though. There's, you know, like, I think I sounded horrific in the World Series. I mean, horrific in the World Series.
Oh, I loved it. Stop.
No. It was really bad. I mean, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but I had a cold. But on top of that, I was really, 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 really
nervous. How many games did you sing?
How many games did I sing in the playoffs that year?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And it was game 4 that you sang at the World
game
Series?
Game 4 of the World Series. My favorite one, I have to say, was game 6 when we beat the Dodgers to go to the World Series.
Well, of course.
And then Mr. Ricketts let me go on the field and celebrate with the team. And,
oh, wow.
Oh, man, was that like growing up a Cubs fan. That was crazy.
How did you hook up with the Cubs? So you work at Ditka's for how many years?
Yep.
And then the Cubs come calling you, what, 5 years ago?
No, the Cubs, thank you very much. The Cubs, I started singing there in 2003.
Oh, wow.
I met Larry Rothschild, who's the pitching coach of the Yankees, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He
sure.
came in there with Ron Coomer and a couple other of the players, and then they said, hey, do you ever want to sing at Wrigley? And it started out, and you know, I had a couple here and there, and then when Mr. Ricketts bought the team, I was getting more and more, and Crane Kenny, who actually gave me my World Series ring, is unbelievable. You know, the Cubs president, I love the man.
Of course.
And then the guys who are in charge of the anthem, Jim Obojkowicz and Max Berman, are just phenomenal guys, and they I deal with them, and they have me do so many events with the Cubs. I just sang the anthem there 2 days ago for yesterday morning. What's today?
Today's Thursday.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay.
It was the front office softball tournament. So it was so awesome. So I'm just walking around the infield and having a blast. Everybody's
singing
out there
during the day on a Tuesday.
It was fantastic.
In October.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish we were playing in October.
I do too. I mean, I do too. But, you know, hey, anytime. I don't live far from Wrigley, so I just like going there. And what they did growing up as a kid to now.
That whole neighborhood is transformed.
My God.
It's just crazy.
Back in the day, it was like, you know, it was a donut shop. It was McDonald's.
that huge parking lot.
That's it.
That parking lot with the donut shop. It was such wasted
now
space.
Now it's unbelievable.
It's
the Hotel Zachary.
It's the green area.
The restaurant.
Right.
Everything. Everything.
Why did
it
take
awesome.
So long?
Well, Mr. Ricketts.
Right.
He did it, and he came in.
He had
and
a vision.
Just, he boomed.
You got to give
I
it
mean,
to him.
Yeah, him and Crane Kenny and them just, I mean, they built that place up to make it a year-round destination.
Right.
Now, so you have the Chris, what was it, Kindle Market coming up there,
and
the ice rink and all that. It's a great spot to go. So
that,
I just,
all
I like
of Wrigleyville. They have hotels and bowling alleys and movie theaters now. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's not too far from my house, which I love. Singer John Vincent in studio. Baseball is a business. You were great friends with Joe Maddon.
Yes, still
and,
am, yes.
He got let go.
Yes.
You must have been very upset about that.
It was sad because I really love Joe. I love Joe. I talked to Joe, you know,
and I've
last
seen
week.
It. I've been at Wrigley and I've seen you two hug on a few occasions.
I love him. I love him, and I do a bunch of his charity events and everything, and I'm so happy for him with the Angels, and I know he's going to be extremely successful there. But, you know, it's weird. You say this. I usually say what I think. Like, I don't have a filter, and I just kind of... You've had me on the show before.
Right, let me put my hand on the dump button. Go ahead,
like
John.
I talk about, you know, suicide. I talk about depression. I talk about all things. So I'm not lying. If I don't like somebody, I don't want to talk about them.
Yeah.
I cannot say I've met a person in the Cubs organization I did not like. Everybody has treated me there unbelievably. They've said, Johnny, you're part of the family. So in my heart, I wish it all would have worked out for everybody.
Right, of course.
I love them all.
Right.
Because all of them just, it was just like 2016 was just, it was awesome.
Magical season.
Magical. And yes. It was just like, I wanted that forever.
Right.
I wanted that forever. You know, I told Theo Epstein, you know, when I saw him, like, he was so nice to me before, you know, in the first series against the Giants, he goes, you know, I'm Theo Epstein. So nice to meet you. Thank you for what you do. I go, are you freaking kidding me? I know who you are. When we win the World Series, you're going to go down as the greatest, you know, GM, president in baseball history, the Red Sox and the Cubs. So I love all them. And then I love Joe, and I wish it just could have always gone on and on. And I know that, you know, they know better than me, and they do what they want, and they all, you know, they think that. But I'm just the anthem singer and a fan. That's all I am. I'm nothing. I can't tell you baseball ins and outs and all that stuff. I could tell you football a lot more because I played it. But, there's just nobody there. It's just a great family there.
Give me that.
I wish it had been forever.
Give me that feeling when you're on the field, especially during a playoff game.
Yeah.
When you're singing and the crowd is screaming and you're halfway through the song. And you know you got half of it to go and you get so excited inside. How do you compose yourself so you don't lose it?
I don't know. You just sing it like, you know, I never was an anthem singer. I started out singing Sinatra songs.
Right.
And then singing other voices and all these, and up to 29 voices now. So the anthem was not something I was thinking of singing. And then a couple places asked me and I started doing it. Another real great one was Duke, North Carolina at Duke.
Oh,
that was awesome.
Gosh.
I mean, to be there with the Cameron Crazies and all that, that was phenomenal.
Wow, who calls you on that one? Hey, you want to come down to Cameron Indoor?
John Shire, the coach under Coach K, called the Cubs and said, we want to get Johnny. He's friends with Jim Obojkovic with the Cubs, and who does, you know.
How great is that experience?
And oh, my God, it was
amazing. Like a high school gymnasium. I went down there probably 7 years ago because it was on my bucket list.
You know who was there? Was the guy from The Hangover, because he went there. what's his name?
Which one? Bradley Cooper?
No.
Ed Helms?
No. The Asian,
Zach Galifianakis?
The Asian gentleman.
Ken Jeong?
Yes. And he's like a doctor
He is a doctor in real life.
Oh, my God. He was hilarious. He was like dancing in front of everybody. The guy is just awesome.
He is crazy.
It was so fun. It was just like just a great experience, you know, and there's nothing like that.
When is your last day at Ditka's?
My last day at Ditka's, I have two more shows. I have a wine dinner on the 15th of November, and then I have my last show on the 23rd. Now, all the seats are full and taken and sold out, I guess.
Okay.
But people are more than welcome to come to the bar or anything.
Hang out at the bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or go somewhere else and listen to a better singer.
Well, I'm going to stop. I'm going to take a break, and I want you to fill us in on what you're doing next, what your next step is. And I want to talk about your fight with depression, because you've been very open about that.
Yeah.
You've talked about bullying, so we'll talk about that when we come back.
You got it.
John Vincent's here. Please follow him on Instagram. You posted something today. It was Sinatra taking a selfie.
Yeah.
He was taking a picture in a mirror, and you posted that. I'm like,
I saw that. I came across that. Somebody put it out there, and it's Sinatra with a camera taking a picture of himself, and he's like, really young, he's taking a picture of himself in the mirror.
Right. That's pretty impressive.
It was so cool.
John Vincent 72 on Instagram.
Yes.
You're a good
Twitter,
follow.
Instagram and Twitter, yes.
More with John coming up next. It's 720 WGN. You can hear that voice live. I mean, that's exactly what you sound like. John Vincent,
okay.
After 18 years, Chicago Treasure is leaving Ditka's on October 23rd. So what is the next step for you? Where are you going?
So the next step is I'm going to take a couple weeks off here because the show I'm doing next, I spoke with, you know who Tom Dreesen is.
Of course.
Tom. I spoke to Mr. Dreesen not too long ago for some advice because what I did at Ditka's was I just sang. And I would just sing. And if I can speak when we're talking or if I'm, you know, speaking about bullying and I know where I'm going with it.
Right.
But it is really hard for me to kind of like speak in between songs and kind of tell a story like Sinatra did and everything. I don't know, for some reason that kind of just jumbles me up.
You're kidding.
No. And so I talked to Mr. Dreesen, who is, you know, was on the, you know, he opened, Letterman show.
He opened
so many
for
times.
Frank Sinatra for 13
years.
Years.
Frank Sinatra's pallbearer. I mean, right. He's unbelievable. And he said, Johnny, you have to have a start, you know, a middle and an end. And it's going to be something totally different. It's going to be a visual experience with the sound. So it's going to be a whole new concept.
You're going to be on a soap opera.
No. but it's going to be at a place called 365 next to RBI's Bar. It's right across the street from Wrigley.
Okay.
And they have a bunch of events there. It has that glass roof. And it's actually like 3658 North Clark. So okay. Right across Wrigley, right across Gallagher Way. And I'm going to be doing Thursdays through Sunday in December there, except for the 7th, 8th, and the 14th, like holiday shows. Christmas shows, all we're going to transform the whole place into
really?
Like a winter wonderland inside.
Okay.
But this glass roof does retract. But even when it's closed, you can see the whole thing.
Right.
And they've had
right.
some really amazing events there. And then Sinatra's birthday is on December 12th. We're going to have a big show there. And I'm going to have either somebody open for me, like a comic. Or another singer.
Okay.
The team that I'm working with, you know, just told me that today. Johnny, what do you want to do? We want to have somebody.
I wish I had a team. I got one guy. It's Michael over there, right behind the glass.
That's all you need. He's the best. you don't need any more. So this is like a pop-up. And then eventually, I'm going to have my own place very, very close to right here, opening February of 2020.
You're kidding. Yeah. Look at you. You're all grown up now.
All grown up.
Man, you've come a long way.
What are you talking about? You walk in, is that the green, we call it the green room? Or
the
what
green
do you call
room.
It? So the green room is gorgeous here. It has a beautiful, you know, windows. You can see navy pair.
Yeah.
Great couches.
18th floor.
18th floor.
Right.
Huge TV.
Yeah.
And you go, Johnny, you're here for an hour earlier. You don't know me that well.
John Vincent
you
showed
understand?
Up. He was scheduled at 10:35. You show up at 9:25.
Well, my fat ass walked from Lincoln Park, and I stopped a couple times. I stopped at Starbucks, and I stopped at Walgreens. And then I was like, all right. So I came up here, but I was like happier than a pig in blank, and S-H, you know what.
Yeah, okay.
Because there was a TV, and I'm watching Seinfeld.
Laying on the couch.
Yeah. I watched the Seinfeld one where George was a fake marine biologist.
Okay.
So it was awesome. I might go back in there after this and go to sleep.
You can hang out all night. That's the best. I want to get serious for a second.
Yeah.
You've
gotten serious
Well,
before.
I want to talk about depression because the last time we had you on, we had you on with Dr. Bal Nandra from ChicagoIVSolutions.com. Dr. Bal came in and you talked about your struggles with depression.
Yeah.
And it's working.
It's working. Yeah,
ketamine treatment is working for you.
Yeah, it is. I'm nuts. I mean, I have OCD, depression, and anxiety. So
we're all a little crazy. Well,
I think we all are.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, my brain is scrambled with just anxiety from, you know, being bullied. And plus, it's a chemical, you know, thing with depression that people don't understand. Depression is chemical. And it's not, everybody can feel sad.
Right.
But sometimes when you get sad for no reason whatsoever, and it lasts for a long, that's depression.
Right.
And a lot of people don't understand that. And I just did an interview earlier this year before ketamine that came out, which was with a band for the broken. I think it was called Stay Alive. And it's on my Facebook page and Instagram and Twitter, and it talks about how, you know, if this can help one person, that I understand what you're going through. And the biggest thing that helped me is people who are depressed said, John, listen, because when somebody can say that to you, you listen because they know what they're talking about.
Of course, because they're going through it.
A lot of
they've
people,
experienced
right,
it.
A lot of people will just be like, well, just be happy, you know, and you can't.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Who doesn't want to be happy?
Right, we all want to be happy.
Or whatever, right? So, you know, I want to just break the stigma, and if I have to look weak, quote-unquote weak, which I don't think it is.
Absolutely not.
Then I'll do it. I'll be the guy that does it, because if it saves people's lives, then that's good. I'll look as weak as you want to make me look. I don't care. As long as other people can get help from it and other people don't feel alone. We're all in this together. This goes in a blink of an eye. And you know what? And it's just, you know, be kind or be nothing. And, you know, I grew up and I was angry for many, 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 many years because of being bullied and everything. And at some point, you just have to just say, like, what do you want to do with your life?
Right.
You know, do you want to make people happy, or do you just want to go through it miserably?
When did you have that that aberration where you said to yourself, okay, I got to do something?
Well, when I did, first time was, my sister was awesome. I mean, she brought me to, she used to work at Loyola, and she brought me to a doctor there when I was 18 years old.
Okay.
But I struggled and struggled and still struggled. The ketamine was the big game changer. Now, I changed my outlook on a lot of things before ketamine, and I wanted to, like, make, you know, things, do things that can make an impact. If mm-hmm. it's talking about bullying or talking about mental illness.
You visit schools, you talk about mental illness to people.
Yeah, yeah. It, you know, but the ketamine made me, like, it opened up my eyes, and it really did a number on my depression. Like, I'm stressed with this new show and leaving Ditka's and all this stuff, but without, you know, therapy and Dr. Ball with ketamine, I just had a couple treatments a while back, it makes it so much easier. But then, like Joe Madden, what he used to always tell me, like, Johnny, don't forget meditation. Meditate. And I don't
got to have quiet time.
Yeah, I don't
just have quiet time. I can't sit there with the crisscross legs and the whole deal. It doesn't work for me.
But that's like huge, that and yoga. And I should do that. You know, I should.
We
really
all
do that.
Should. But if you take a moment and just relax your body.
Yeah.
That's meditation. Or sit in your car with everything breathing. Off before you walk into a meeting. Yeah, just breathe.
Well, I had a really good friend of mine tell me, his name is Perry Mandera. I love this guy. He said, Johnny, he goes, when somebody drowns, he goes, the reason why they drown is because they panic.
Yeah.
And they get, their breath gets really shallow and they're fighting to it, you know, and all this. He goes, deep breaths.
Right.
And if you hear people say that, they tell you, breathe deeply.
Yep.
And slow down. And like right when you take that deep breath,
Breath, you feel it in your body.
Yeah,
you relax.
You do.
But this is what I love about you. Here was a guy like you on a national stage singing the national anthem at the World Series. And you can talk about this and people can relate to you. I mean, kids see you on TV and, oh my gosh, you're bigger than life. But when you walk into schools and talk about how you were bullied as a kid, that helps kids. It does. You're doing good work.
It's amazing. You know, we go into these big auditoriums, and sometimes there's about 100, sometimes there's as many as 600-700, and then, you know, I'll speak a little bit, and nothing's ever scripted, and then the kids will come up and ask questions, and they're really smart. I mean, the stuff they come up with and say, it's pretty amazing. I'm like, wow. You know, the tough thing is that me and you, and I don't know if you ever were bullied, but the tough thing is now, compared to back in the day, is this cyberbullying.
Yeah, it's rough.
So they
stuff.
can't get away from it unless you know, I got my phone in front of me. Everybody always has
their phone in their hand.
All of us, we always do. So, you know, they don't have like that unless they put it away and don't look at it. It's like they're cyberbullying and all these other things, and it's just like, wow. Like that's just so much stuff coming at you. It really you feel for people.
You're doing great work, man. It's good to see you.
Good to see
it really is. John Vincent 72 on Instagram. Follow him on Facebook. You know I love you.
I want to say I love you too. I want to say one more thing. My cousin Christina passed away 3 years ago of uterine sarcoma. I think I'm saying it correctly. We are having a benefit for her at Edgewood Valley Country Club on Saturday. I'll be singing at I think it's ChristinaCares.org or something.
Is
like that.
Is it on your Facebook page?
I'll put it on my Facebook page.
Please put it on there because we'll all check it out.
Yeah. It's my memory's bad. I'm
and
sorry.
Continued success, and I will see you at the new place, and I will post it too. Your first night.
Thank you, brother.
John Vincent. Everybody, news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at 720 WGN. You want to talk legends? This woman is absolutely on the list. It's a shame the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees were announced this week, and she is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's what friends are for. 6-time Grammy Award winner. She is one of the most charted female vocalists of all time. Her new album is entitled Dionne Warwick and the Voices of Christmas. It is Dionne Warwick. It is a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. Just hearing your voice. I mean, Dionne, you're like everyone's favorite aunt that we all know and love and we just want to hang out with and hear you talk.
That's a good thing. I'm glad to hear that.
Your Christmas album, I love you. I love Christmas music. This is a can't miss album.
Oh wow! I'm so thrilled about this CD. Christmas is my time of the year. I love Christmas. It's the time of the year when people actually become people. They're human. for a change. You know, they smile at you. They say hello to you. They open doors for you. They carry packages for you.
Right.
They become people.
Right.
And I've always said, and I truly believe that I wish we could have Christmas every single day of our lives. We wouldn't be living in this chaotic world we're living in right now.
It's a little crazy, right? Christmas does, the holidays do bring the good out in people. But this Christmas album, I want to talk to you about the duets that you did. Michael McDonald, love him. John Rich from the Oak Ridge Boys, love him. Aloe Black, who I absolutely love. I discovered this guy about 2 years ago when he did a collaboration with Jim Peterick, who's from Chicago. These are some great people on your album.
They sure are. You know, I am so blessed with the fact that every single person on the CD wanted to be there. They wanted to do this with me. And they were chosen very specifically for the songs that they sang. The arrangements were done primarily around their particular style of music. It was a joy doing the CD, an absolute joy.
I mean, how does it work? Does Dionne Warwick pick up the phone and call up Michael McDonald and say, hey, I'm going to do a Christmas album. Are you in? Of course they're going to say yes.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, that was the beauty of it. They all wanted to be a part of the CD with me.
You've done duets in the past. I got to ask you about That's What Friends Are For. You did a duet with three other people. I want to say it was Stevie Wonder, Gladys Knight. Who was the third?
Try Elton John.
Elton John, Gladys Knight, and Stevie Wonder. You did a duet with these three on That's What Friends Are For. How does that work? Are you all in the same room? Do you cut your parts? How does it work?
Yes, absolutely. We're all in the same room at the same time, enjoying each other and the song we're doing.
And nobody has an ego. Everybody is just singing and having a good time.
Well, first of all, we're all friends. And there's no reason for egos. You know, we've known each other for many, many years. You know, Gladys and I have been friends. We're more sisters than friends, basically, the family.
Right.
Stevie and I've known Stevie since he's 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
You know, and he's the joy of my life. And Elton, of course, I've known for many years. Prolific songwriter and recording artist in his own right. Performing artist, undoubtedly. So, you know, it was just a bunch of fun. I think it shows on the video that we did of the song.
Oh, absolutely.
We loved each other and enjoyed what we were doing.
Well, you could tell that the chemistry's there. We're talking with Dionne Warwick. What was that one moment in your life when you look back at your life that you can say, wow, that really changed my life? Was it meeting Burt Bacharach?
No.
What would be that moment? What's the moment that
Bacharach and David, of course, have been a prolific part of my recording life, and subsequently not only friends, but I look at them as family as well. You know, and I miss Hal very, very much today. But, you know, our relationship blossomed over a period of years. And they tailor-made music for me, and hopefully I put in a credible performance for their writings.
You grew up singing in the church. You ever go back to church and sing?
Always, as often as I possibly can.
I'm at a wedding on Saturday. I would love to walk in and hear Dionne Warwick just sing. Have you ever done that? Has anyone ever asked you to sing at their wedding?
No, they haven't.
You're kidding.
I've sung at birthdays, but I've never sang at a wedding. Another wedding singer, I don't think.
For a niece or a relative, I mean, if you were my aunt, I would ask you, Dionne, listen, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
When the bride comes down, could you sing? Oh, my gosh.
None of them have ever asked me to do that, fortunately.
Wow. That would be my first ask, but I'm the guy that always is the uncomfortable ask. I'm that guy. And what are you doing for the holidays? You have a Christmas album out. What are you going to be doing for the holidays this year?
First, I'm going to be out doing concerts from singing these Christmas songs, hopefully with some of my duet partners. And I will be doing my normal Christmas thing. Family, friends, you know, food, music,
right,
laughter, joy, presents, all that good stuff. I have seven grandchildren.
Seven!
So it's going to be a very special time of the year for me.
Oh, that is fantastic. And you were in Chicago, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, doing a fundraiser here in Chicago, is that right?
Yes.
With then-Mayor Rahm Emanuel and President Obama. Are we going to see you in Chicago for this album?
I certainly hope so.
The city loves you. You know that, right?
Yes, I do. And it's always been wonderful performing there, even when it's as cold as it can get there.
That is right. I would schedule that Christmas concert sometime in November before the polar vortex hits. Dionne Warwick,
exactly.
Dionne, do me a favor. Keep smiling. Keep shining, knowing you can always count on me for sure.
I certainly will. Thanks for
Dionne Warwick and the Voices of Christmas. Really a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for staying up tonight.
Thank you, darling. All right. Take care.
Take care. It's 720 WGN. Nice. Dionne Warwick. There was a point when we were talking where I thought she was going to get upset when I asked her if she's ever sang at a wedding, which would be normal, right? If you have a singer like Dionne Warwick in the family, don't you think she would be asked?
Every single time that there was a wedding, I think.
Right. I mean, if she was my aunt, hey, Dionne, listen, I'm getting married. Can you sing at my wedding? Well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Do you think she would ask for money, or would it be like a pro bono kind of thing because you're family?
Well, you got to pay everybody, and everybody's got their hand out.
True.
If it's a relative.
She is the on the diva list, too.
She is.
Mm-hmm.
She is a diva. I would love to see her in concert, though.
We had a great call in while the interview was going on, and since Dionne is a very busy woman, I couldn't get him on at the moment, but he said that he just saw her, I think, in Aurora or in Chicago, and she blew him away.
What? Shoot, man. Here's a question for everybody listening right now. 312-981-7200. Who is on your bucket list? Who do you want to see? Who is on your bucket list? 312-981-7200. I'd like to see Dionne.
Yeah.
She's not on my bucket list, but if she was in town, I would absolutely go see her.
Would she be in the top 100?
Well, of course.
Okay.
I mean, that's a lot of people.
You need to find people if you're in.
Wouldn't
that.
She be in your top 100?
Absolutely. I want to see every single like 1960s, 70s, and 80s performer that's still around, for sure.
I mean, to hear that's what friends are for in concert?
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
It was nice hearing you sing it, though, too.
That stands up for... I don't know how she took that at the beginning when we started talking. I think I scared her. All right. So, Bill, you're on WGN. Hi.
Slightly off key.
Are you sure about that?
Just a tad.
Are you sure?
I've seen 55 concerts in the last 4 years, so yeah, just slightly.
Let's friends up!
But.
Yes.
Saw her in Aurora about a month and a half ago.
Okay, where was she? What venue?
River Edge Park, it's called.
Oh, sure. I love River Edge. That's a great venue.
Outstanding venue.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and her son is the drummer, and her son's daughter, granddaughter, was Cheyenne Elliott, and she performed with him.
Oh,
amazing.
Wow.
And they're all, her son can sing like you wouldn't believe and play the drums, and she's an amazing singer. Cheyenne is.
Boy, that venue right on the river. I saw REO there a few years ago. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I've seen so many concerts there. It's ridiculous. From Earth, Wind, and Fire, Temptations, Alabama. I mean, you can go on and on and on. And they're all amazing. Peter Frampton, America.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I need to see Earth, Wind, and Fire. We had Philip Bailey on.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. His son is amazing.
Yeah. Who's on your bucket list? You've seen so many concerts. Who's left?
Not many. I mean, I just last month I saw Steely Dan, Orleans, Poco, Toto.
Wow.
Let's see. I've gotten Elton John next year, Billy Joel next year. I mean, that's.
I got to see Elton John. He's on my list.
That's my fourth time for this one.
Okay.
Never saw Elton, huh, Pete?
I've never seen Elton. We have an echo, don't we? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay. There's our echo. I think it's line one and two. We get an echo off that one.
Actually, Bill just always loves the reverb. He just loves concert that much. He has it on his phone.
I mean, God bless him. I wish I could go to that many shows.
Yeah.
That's awesome. 312-981-7200. What is on your bucket list? I have Elton John. I have Robert Plant, who I've never seen. I put Springsteen on there because I need to see Springsteen every single time he comes through.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does multiple shows, I go to all the shows here in Chicago.
Is there like when you go to these shows and you have multiple times that you're at these, seeing the same person over and over again, is there something that the super fan is looking for, or is it just like the comfort and just love of just this artist? Or is there a moment where they're like, wow, maybe he might break out into a Beatles cover or...
Yep. It's all of the above. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen with Springsteen. It's always something. Mm-hmm. It's always something.
He's
That's why he is the greatest. 312-981-7200. Rosemary, who's on your bucket list?
Well, Barbara Streisand, for one.
Barbara Streisand. She was here not too long ago, wasn't she?
Yeah, I know, but my son couldn't afford to get me there.
It was crazy how expensive those tickets were.
Oh, yeah. Well, I could see Barry Manilow. I don't know how many times I've seen him. He's never disappointed me.
I love Barry Manilow. True story, Rosemary. I went to Barry Manilow with 10 other guys. It was 11 of us sitting there singing Barry Manilow songs, and it was a wonderful show.
Oh, yeah. He has never... I mean, I possibly have seen him more than 10, 12 times.
Oh, wow.
And he has never disappointed me.
You're a super fan.
And now that I'm a little older and a little bit slower, my son says, no, you could listen to him on the radio or the TV, but you're not going anymore.
Well, that's too bad. Barry Manilow was great in concert. I agree.
Oh, yeah.
How about Neil Diamond? Have you ever seen Neil?
Yes. I have seen Neil.
Another great show. I think he stopped touring, doesn't he? He has early stages of dementia.
I saw him maybe 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
When he was here.
I think I saw him 20 years ago at the United Center. I think we were at the same show.
I think we were at the same show.
I think you tried to kiss me during that show, and I said, hold on, I have a girlfriend. Yeah.
Well, you know what it is.
Neil Diamond, another great one. Rosemary, thank you for calling.
Thank you for listening.
All right.
I love your show.
Well, thank you very much. You have a great night. That is Rosemary, everybody. That's just wonderful. 312-981-7200. We're talking about concerts. Who is on your bucket list? I have a list in front of me. Where is it? 10 musicians you need to see before you die. Let's go through this list and see if we've seen these bands. Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yes, seen them a few times. I actually saw them when the Foo Fighters were opening for them back in the day.
Wow. That was I saw them at show. Lollapalooza, a great show. Number 9, Blur. Never heard of them. Who's Blur?
A British band. You know them from song number 2. Woo-hoo.
You lost me in British.
Oh, okay. Blur. They're pretty good.
Number 8, Muse.
I've seen Muse before.
I don't need to see Muse.
A lot of sound for three people in the band.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Radiohead.
No, I don't want to see them.
They were at Lollapalooza. Did you see them there?
I have seen them at Lollapalooza. Yeah, that's right.
Foo Fighters.
Oh, of course. You need that should be a number one or two on some people's list.
Great show. Dave Grohl, though. And I'm not a prude, but he just swears like crazy at these shows. Just dial it down a little bit. I love Dave Grohl. He's the new generation of rock. He is a rock star.
Yes.
And he bridges the old generation with the new. That's why I love him.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's awesome. All right, Foo Fighters. David Bowie passed away. Sorry.
Yeah, you can't see him anymore.
AC/DC. I see them every time they come to town. When they played Wrigley Field, one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Man.
So good.
Thunderstruck.
Fleetwood Mac.
Never seen Fleetwood Mac, but I have spoken to Mick Fleetwood about his career before, which was pretty awesome. I've heard the stories.
Couldn't you get tickets for him?
No. It was he.
Hey, Mick, how about a little something for the effort?
That was when he was writing books on photography and not playing music with the band. And then Lindsey Buckingham got kicked out. Now it's just not the same anymore. You know,
they're still playing the hits. The Fleetwood Mac. I saw Fleetwood Mac at the Allstate Arena, probably a top 5 concert because you know every single song.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yeah. You know what? I would have loved to see that first time when they brought out the band from UCLA to play
Tusk.
Yeah. Yeah, I asked him about that specific moment, too.
And what did he say?
He said that the reason and the inspiration he got from bringing that dun-dun, you know, yeah. in Tusk was because he was hungover one night in California, and the UCLA band was performing outside his window, and he kept waking up, and it was just pounding in his head over and over again. And then the next day, he went into the studio and said, you know what we need that would really make an impact? A full marching band for this song. That would give it a little bit more boost. And that's why he was in California, hungover, and thanks to UCLA's marching band, that song came to be.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Could you get tickets next time for all of us?
I will definitely ask.
Number two, Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Did you see them in at the United Center? Not the United Center. At Soldier Field.
Yeah. Opening night.
Wow.
They were so good. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it.
How does Mick do 2 hours of
Mick is so
dancing?
Good. Ron Wood is fantastic mm-hmm. on guitar. Charlie Watts, he's so old and he can still play the drums. The three of those guys are great.
Mm-hmm.
Keith Richards is done. He's terrible. He can't move on stage. You ask anybody that was at those two shows.
Mm-hmm.
Great to see Keith. He can't play a lick or barely move. He's done.
Give me your thoughts. Who do you think would have a higher priority or like a higher chance? Keith Richards running the mile or what's the drummer's name again?
Charlie Watts.
Charlie Watts smiling.
Charlie Watts all day.
Okay.
Yes. All day, every day, twice on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a chance, they're going to come back around. They'll play the United Center. Go see the Rolling Stones. They're great.
And the thing is, even if you're not a fan of their music and you think that they're, I don't know, overrated or whatever you think about them, seeing that show really blew me away. You need to make that part
Give
of
Gimme Shelter Live? Really? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
It bummed me out, though, because the part where the backup singer, the woman, comes up and sings next to Mick at the front of the stage, her mic went out. It was the first night of the tour, and her mic went out.
Jeez.
I'm like, guys, couldn't you check that? Walk out to the satellite stage, maybe check the cordless mic?
Mm-hmm.
That's the best part of the song.
For the most infamous solo of all time?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Her mic went out.
Jeez.
72,000 strong. At Soldier Field, the kickoff of their world tour here in Chicago.
More like Charlie No Watts.
The mic went out. And bands that you need to see. Number one on this list, Bruce Springsteen. I am not kidding when I say this. He is a performer. The guy is still in fantastic shape. And I've seen him over 55 times.
Mm-hmm.
And each show is different in its own right. I want to say the last show he did at the United Center was probably the best show.
Yeah?
It was.
He still jumps into the crowd, too? Goes
He's
crowd surfing?
Great. I love him.
Man.
I love him. I can go on tour with him again.
The boss.
I did that in 88. Spent all my money. All right, quick break. We'll check news. And David Hochberg just walked in. Tell us what's on your bucket list in a second. Think about that. It's 720 WGN.
The good thing about being a 450, the bad thing about being a 450 is you're a 450. The good thing about 450 is you can't go much lower, right? It's like meat,
yes.
Right? You take the bucket of chicken away from me and give me a bucket of vegetables, I got to lose weight. And you're screwing me up by blowing it off.
What are you doing for me?
Say, hey, where's my dough? Wow, I'm like, well, that's 150 grand right there. You make my heart sing. I'm like, what are you firing on me for? You make everything proven. So I'm like, okay. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Wild
thing. In studio with us from Team Hochberg, 56David.com is his website. It is David Hochberg. How do you like your new intro?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah,
I'm very pleased with that. Mm-hmm. Took you what about 45 seconds to put that together?
It did.
That
yes,
was very very well done.
Uh-huh.
Nicely done, Pete.
Thank you very much.
All you future broadcasters out there, you could pull that off too. That's great.
Explain to people on a grading scale, a school grading scale, A to F. Okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where does a 450 sit?
That's like a G. that's worse than an F. EFG. Yeah, that's a G.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, from what I've been told,
yeah.
the grading scales go from like 350 up to 850.
350?
I've never seen anything in the three, and I've pulled tens of thousands of credit reports over the past 19 years. The lowest that I've seen has been in the 450s. And, you know, the medical challenges, marital challenges,
yes.
job challenges.
This I like how you say marital challenges.
Well, yeah, I've been, you know, you got to get the first one out of the way, is right. what I tell them.
Oh, and then that's how it works, okay.
Yeah, yeah, you know, the first one's a cup of coffee, and then you move on.
Got
so
it.
That's what I did. I found my true love the second time.
Oh.
And she's a keeper. So,
is your wife listening right
I
now?
I think so. Oh, and, you know, I got to stay within the white lines. No, the... You know, people have mm-hmm. different situations, right? A lot of medical challenges. You know, you had John on, who is a depression survivor,
yeah.
and a bunch of other
Vincent. He's
John
a singer
Vincent.
Here in Chicago.
Phenomenal.
Been at Ditka's for 18 years, a right. Chicago institution. Yeah,
and he's overcome his mental challenges, and he sought out medication. He sought out the treatment. This ketamine is supposed to be wonderful, but all that costs money.
Right.
And some people don't have the resources to do what John does to get the yeah. help that he needed. And a lot of that, you just spiral out of control and you get medical bills, and it's just an anchor, and people just blow up their credit because of it. There's nothing. Yeah, then some people just go out there and buy stuff they can't afford and just blow themselves up because they need to have those great pair of pants for some reason.
Right.
You know, with the other 40 pair of pants in their closet. So I don't know. It's just what people do.
Michael is a millennial.
Yes.
And we had this story 2 weeks ago, and we've held on to it
for
you.
Yeah, okay.
31% of millennials would consider breaking up over a financial secret.
Hmm. Okay.
Money issues, a
money
deal
issues.
Breaker.
Right.
You've seen that. Of
All
course it is.
Absolutely.
I thought 31% was a little low.
I thought it was low.
People thought millennials are shallow. I don't have a problem with it whatsoever.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Survey revealed that more than 1 in 4, 27% of millennials currently keep a financial secret from their partner. I feel like people...
Like what?
more than any other generation, the biggest financial secret is credit card debt.
Sure.
43% of all respondents hide debt.
Right.
Credit card debt.
You know why?
Why?
Because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses, and the Joneses are broke.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to go out to that restaurant because that restaurant, that's the hottest restaurant. Everybody goes to that restaurant. Well, guess what? You can't afford the restaurant. Okay. You can afford the hot dog stand at the corner. You can't afford the white glove treatment with the white, you know, with the nice tablecloths. You can afford the beef sandwich with the fries and the Diet Coke because you got to have the Diet Coke with the beef sandwich and the fries because you got to save some calories. You know, you try to keep up with the joint. I tell the story all the time. Okay, I moved in a nice little neighborhood in Northbrook. My wife and I had a baby. My wife had the baby. I had something to do with it. And, and what married couples do, you put the baby in the stroller and you walk around the neighborhood, get a little exercise, you get out of the house.
In the bugaboo. You got to buy an expensive stroller, don't you?
Well, if you could afford an expensive stroller, right? So we start pushing our little daughter around, Carly, who's 16 now. So this was 16 years ago. And we're walking around our nice neighborhood. In Northbrook, new car in every garage, and there are 160 houses in our neighborhood in our little subdivision. My wife's like, "How could these people afford all these brand new cars?" She's like, "Can't believe it." I go, "They can't." And she's like, "What do you mean they can't? Every you know, there's an Escalade there, there's a Range Rover there, there's a Lexus over there, there's this over there." I'm like, "She's like, what do you mean they can't? They've got brand new cars." I go, "I pull credit report all the time. These people are driving $50,000, $80,000, $110,000 cars that can't afford it." She's like, "Then how can they afford it? What are they doing?" I go, the same thing I told her. I go, "They're trying to keep up with the Joneses, but the Joneses are broke."
Right.
"And they don't have any money."
Oh,
but their neighbor gets an Escalade, so we got to go get the next late XLT because we need the extended cab for the extra 20 Gs.
You are trying to keep up with the Joneses. I swear to you, I had this conversation with my wife when we had a baby.
And they're broke.
I'm like, how is this guy driving a Land Rover? He doesn't make that much money.
He can't afford
the car. He can't afford it.
And there's nothing wrong with driving a Range Rover. It's nothing wrong with driving a Mercedes, a Lexus, or Cadillac.
Right.
If you can afford to drive those, have a nice day. Go buy a nice car. Enjoy yourself. Right? I got a nice car. I'm in my car. I got 68,000 miles in 3 years. I'm in my car a lot. I want to be comfortable. I'm on the phone 95% of the time. Right?
Right.
So it's my office. There's nothing. But I can afford my car payment. Right? Most people can't. I pull credit reports, Pete. It's like, for love of God. Combined, you make 120 G's a year, which you think is a lot of money, which
yep.
in this day and age is not a lot of money, especially in Chicago with the Meshuggy taxes we got going on here. 10 grand a month, right? So break it down. 120 G's a year, that's two families, that's a four or five person, family, mom and dad are working, each making 60 G's each, right? Or 75 and 50, you know, 45, whatever it is, it's 120 grand.
Right, that's your nut.
That's your nut. That's your gross. It's 10 G's a month, okay? You got taxes, you got FICA, you got Social Security, everything else, you got 401Ks. Boom, you're coming home with, if you're lucky, 6 grand a month. Okay, with everything taken out.
You're right,
with
40%. Just
40%,
take it off the top.
Boom, gone. Yep. You're at 6 G's a month. Okay, now figure this. You got 6 G's, you got a house payment.
Yep.
Probably 3 G's. Mm-hmm. So you're down to a half. You got 2 car payments. Let's just say you got realistic cars. Boom, there's 500 bucks a piece. You're down to 2 G's.
Right.
Right? You got 2.5, 3 kids. You got to feed them. You got to clothe them.
Yep.
You got to entertain them.
Yep.
Johnny's got to go to soccer. Sally's got to go to volleyball.
It's always Sally.
It's Sally, you know, Sally, you know, and then God forbid somebody gets sick. Right? You got to take the vacation to Disney. There's another 8 to 12 grand.
Oh, I hate
you
got
to send Junior to, you know, he plays baseball. You got to send him to Cooperstown. There's another 2, 3 G's. It's never ending. So you think you're making 100 grand a year.
You're broke.
You're broke.
Yeah, you don't have any money.
And you carry 20, 30, 40 G's on your credit card debt.
You can't do that.
Well, people are. People are.
20 grand a month is how much?
About $800 a month. It's 4% minimum monthly payment on your credit card now. Thank you to Chuck Schumer. And in Obama administration
so
once.
20 grand is $800 a month.
Yeah, it used to be $400.
And how much of that is interest?
I don't know what it all depends, but the minimum payment is typically around 4%. That's what the minimum credit card payment.
Wow.
The Schumer rule that they passed during Obama won. They changed the way that the credit cards were the minimum monthly payments.
How do people afford that?
They don't. They take out more credit cards to pay the other credit cards.
Wow.
And they're swimming and treading water. And I'll tell you what, that's a shock. Those numbers do not surprise me.
Let's talk about baby boomers. Baby boomers have their secrets too when it comes to hiding bank accounts. 52% of these older generations conceal money secrets from their partners.
How?
In fact, their generation has no plans to tell their financial secrets before they die. They have debt.
So somebody goes into the ground. Oh, by
they
the way,
have debt.
Surprise!
They don't know. They can hide it from their
actually,
spouse.
It happens
all the time.
I shouldn't be surprised. Because we get calls from widows and widowers, hey, I didn't know about this. And what happens is they open up credit cards. One spouse opens up a credit card and doesn't tell the other one. And I've had situations where I'm doing cash out refinances and one party wants to take out an extra 20 grand. I'm like, okay, you know, what are you going to do with the 20 grand? Well, I've got some credit card my other partner doesn't know about. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, we're not going to tell him. I'm like, listen, that's your business, right? I got to pull the credit report. It's going to be on the loan application.
Right.
I can't.
They're going to find out.
I can't redact something on a credit application. I'm going to send you the loan application. If I run a dual credit report, I got to populate all the credit. You know, you've got to explain that.
Right.
I can't get away. I'm not going to redact anything on a loan application. That's fraud. Okay. So, I mean, if it pops up, you know, I hit a button. It says import all the liabilities. Boom. Here are all the liabilities. She's like, well, or he's like, what am I going to do? I'm like, oh, you got to freaking come clean.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to tell him.
You got to tell him. So I get that all the time. It's not a surprise. I just don't know how you do it. I have 3 credit cards. Okay, I've got 2 American Expresses and a Visa or MasterCard. Whatever I have. That's all I have. Right. And so, and my wife and I know exactly what we have.
Do people have more than 3?
Oh my God! Please, are you that naive?
I really am. Because
are you living in that big of a box?
Now remember, I didn't have a credit card until I got married.
Here. Newsflash.
And hold on a second. I know, well, we had the conversation. Remember, I had a credit card and I ran it up. That's why we met at the Starbucks and had that dark moment in my life where I said, hey, I need some help.
Yeah, and you had that goofy
and then a light shined from the skies right on me, and then you walked in. And
Yeah, that was exactly how it worked.
It was a wonderful time.
Yeah, and the music started playing and the skies opened up. And the hand of God reached down, smacked you upside the head. So
what are you doing?
Most people carry ten to 15 credit cards.
Stop it. Nobody has 10 credit cards. Who has 10 credit cards? What?
I would say 70% of your listeners right now
What?
Have 10 credit cards. Okay? I'm not saying that that's right or wrong. That's what they have. And what is it? They've got the Gap credit card. They got the Victoria's Secret, which everybody, there's nothing wrong with
well,
the Victoria's Secret.
Well, I'm okay Secret. With that.
I'm 100%
yeah.
fine
yeah.
with
just
that.
Just for research purposes. Just, and my wife needs to have comfortable
and
undergarments.
You got, and right. that you enjoy watching.
Right.
You know, you've got the Nordstrom's. You know, you've got all these cards from all these stores. And I'm just like, what about like a Visa, MasterCard, American Express that you could use? Oh, I need to have this. And they've had it for 10, 15 years,
wow.
which is good for their credit report, right?
Okay.
Because it's on there. But a lot of your listeners go out and take the extra 15% when they buy that pair of pants at the Gap, if they're even, you know, the Gap anymore, Banana Republic or wherever they go.
Right.
You know, Macy's, they open up the store card, save the 15%, never shut it down. And then they get the specials. Oh, we're having, you know, you're going to have the Christmas special coming up. You're going to have the Thanksgiving special coming up. You know, come in now and put this code in, save
right.
an extra 10%.
Yep. So you keep using it.
They keep using it.
Right.
That's what it's all about.
Build
man.
Up that credit.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you about credit cards, because when I paid off my credit card,
yeah.
I lowered my balance, and I want to ask you about
what?
That.
You,
I mean,
you they, called up and said you want to take your $1,000 balance limit down to 500? No, seriously?
Your face just dropped. I know the answer already. Michael, did you see his face? Did you see the Hawks
really
face?
Did you
really
do
that? A bit of shock.
No.
Yes, really. Because I don't trust myself. Hold on. Hold that thought. Okay. Let me take a break. David Hochberg's here. If you have a question about mortgages or credit card, now is your time to ask. 312-981-7200. David Hochberg is here from Team Hochberg. If you have a question about mortgages or credit card debt, he is your guy. You can go to 56david.com or 855-56-DAVID. Or you can call us and get free advice right now.
What did you do?
It's immediate gratification.
Yes.
Okay, I have two credit cards with both with $20,000 or $25,000 balance.
Which is great. Limits.
I took limits.
Right.
I called up the bank and I said, listen.
I want to do something very stupid.
I lowered my credit limit to $1,000,
right.
my limit.
Okay.
Okay, what happens? What's it do?
You just cut off 9 of your toes.
Why is that?
Because you eliminated availability that you had.
Okay.
And you shrunk it down, so when you charge something on that card,
yep.
it looks dramatically worse. So you had you went from $20,000 availability,
right,
down to $1,000. Okay, so if you charged $1,000 on that credit card, okay, you'd be at 5% capacity under the $20,000 limit.
I did that 2 weeks ago,
which is fine.
And I paid it off right away.
Okay, would you let me finish? Okay. I don't come over there and interrupt you while you're
when his face dropped before the commercial, I knew I was in trouble.
So basically what you did there, Spartacus,
yes.
okay, you had $20,000 availability.
Yeah.
And you had $1,000 worth of debt on there.
Right.
Which doesn't impact you at all.
Okay.
Because it's like peeing in the ocean to raise the tide. Okay? But when you eliminate $19,000 worth of availability and drop it down to $1,000.
Yeah, but I don't trust myself.
And then would you stop and let me finish?
Yeah.
And then you charge $1,000.
Right.
You're now at 100% capacity and you're crushing your credit scores.
But don't I, if I pay it off right away?
Sure.
Don't I get credit for that?
Sure.
Okay.
But most times you go 3-4 weeks without paying it off, or you wait for the bill to come. And that crushes your credit scores because you're carrying a full balance during that 3 or 4 week period.
So what advice would you give me?
Not to close down $19,000 worth of availability.
Should I call my bank and say I need the 20 grand back?
You say, I hit my head. I don't know what I was thinking. Okay? I had a Jerry Maguire moment. I had bad pizza. And I woke up and called you. Can I have the 19 grand back? What's the difference?
I have another credit card that has a $20,000 balance.
Doesn't matter.
Should I use that?
You should call the credit card to get the 19 grand back.
Oh, I hate
it. And then use it and pay it off.
I hate credit cards. I hate them.
I know you do, but you don't do that.
I know.
It's like driving a car without a seatbelt.
I have 50 text messages in front of me. We got to get to them. My husband and I played by the rules. We saved when we were young before kids, never drove fancy cars. We have saved money. Now we are punished for our kids' college.
Oh, yeah.
We will not qualify for financial aid, but we are not wealthy by any stretch. Any creative suggestions to pay for our daughter's college? Wow.
Okay.
I feel bad for 630.
So I will tell you this. There is a lady by the name of Ray Kaplan. She's been on John Williams' show. I have a show on another station across the river. She's been on my show. She's phenomenal.
She's great. I've heard her on John's show.
Phenomenal.
Yes.
Ray Kaplan, Kaplan Law Group. If you text me, if you give me a call, 855-56-DAVID, I will connect you with Ray. Ray knows everything about student loans.
Ray is a woman.
Yeah, R-A-E.
R-A-E.
She's a rock star.
A lot of people think it's Ray. It's this old guy. It's
no,
not.
No. Ray mm-hmm. Kaplan. She lives by me up in Glenview.
Oh,
she's,
really?
She's outstanding. She saved a
Got
buddy
a Range
of mine.
Rover?
I don't know. But maybe. And she could afford it. Mm-hmm. But she saved a buddy of mine, no joke, over $250,000 on
what?
A student loan.
How?
70, he's 55 years old. He's going to be retiring in 10 years. I didn't know about this. I'm walking out of an appointment. I get a call from my buddy. He's like, I can't thank you enough. I'm like, okay, what do I do? Right? He's like, but my wife and I just met with Ray, and she's saving us $250,000. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? She's like, she's saving us $1,750 a month. I'm like, what?
On what?
Student loans. So they have three boys.
Oh.
Sent them all to college.
Oh,
two
boy.
Of them went to grad school.
Wow.
So long story short, they've got like 300-400 G's worth of student loan debt that they're covering for their kids. There are so many different rules. She saved them $1,750 a month.
Yeah, she can work magic.
Over
I'm
3 years.
I've heard it.
And then year four through 10,
yeah.
It drops down to, it goes from 1700 to like 1400. And then when he becomes retirement age, it drops down even further because it doesn't count retirement income. I knew nothing of this.
That
it's not my expertise.
Great.
So 630, please give me a call, 855-56-DAVID. Mention that you're looking for Ray. I'll connect you with Ray tomorrow. She's phenomenal.
Or go to 56David.com.
Yeah.
I know I messed up, but is there a way to refinance a high APR personal loan?
Ooh. Messed up meaning what? You missed some payments and your credit sucks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your credit challenge? Probably not. If there's equity in your home, what we could do is, because a lot of people's equity have come back since the collapse of 07-08, we're doing a ton of cash out refinances. We pulled out close to, I think, $200,000-$300,000 out of people's equity out of people's homes just last month alone. I'm still getting the totals. We could take a look at refinancing that. If not, I don't know. My recommendation is stop making mistakes and... Right? Isn't that what they said? I made mistakes.
Stop making mistakes.
Well, and it's easier said than done. Listen,
right.
You know, that's like me saying, you know, why don't you lose weight? Put the fork down, fatty. I get it.
How do you clean that up?
How do I clean my weight up?
No.
Stop
making mistakes. You got to look at the whole deal.
You got to look at the whole deal. Yeah. You got to start making stuff on time. Yep. And every month you make it on time and don't have any lates, you're getting stronger.
Another one here. Hi, please ask David, how do you talk sense into a family member who won't change his behavior?
Yeah.
Live within his means and stop asking family for money.
Got to cut him off. Got to cut him and her off. It's cold turkey. When I've seen this thousands of times, you could continue to give that person money. You enable that person. That person keeps coming back.
Yeah.
And that person will never learn. You got to cut them off cold turkey. It hurts and it's tough, but you got to do it. Or else they'll never change.
708 area code. At one time, I had 27 credit cards.
Yeah.
Cut them up. I have two now. As you get older, you learn. 27?
What did I tell you?
How do you carry those in a wallet?
Well, you don't there, genius. But, you know, or if you do, you got one butt cheek bigger than the other. But, you know, because it's a huge wallet. What did I tell you earlier? 10 credit cards, 10,
yeah.
15 credit. This person's got 27.
Wow.
Okay, now here's what I would
forget about department store credit cards. I think
sure.
Everybody's got 10 Visa and MasterCards.
Of course.
They have department stores.
Here's
get the 10%
deal.
Off, sign up at Nordstrom.
Sure.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. As you close them down, contact a credit card that you're holding and pick up availability. So if you're closing down a credit card with a $500 limit,
yep.
Go back to the credit cards you're keeping and ask them to at least open up a greater $500 limit on the cards that you're keeping. That way you keep the equilibrium of available debt available.
Wait, say that again. You lost
okay,
me.
So if you have $1,000 worth of credit card debt,
okay.
Right? And credit card availability.
Yes.
Okay, on five cards. Okay, so each card has $200 available.
Right.
And you want to drop two cards.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to eliminate $400 worth of availability on two cards.
Yep.
Go to the three cards that you're keeping and ask them to increase them a combined $400. So you have three cards left with the same $1,000 worth of availability. Unlike what you did, and you went from 20 voluntarily down to one. Okay, oh, so this way, you go back to the credit cards that you're keeping, and whatever credit you're losing availability on, go back to the credit cards you're keeping and ask them to increase the line that you could borrow so you have the same amount of availability.
Team Hochberg, 56David.com, 855-56-DAVID.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah.
FHA just changed the rules with spot condo approvals. What does that mean? That means if your loved one is living in a condo and needs a reverse mortgage, we can now get them in the condominium complex. Does not have to be FHA approved. We could get that their unit approved. Or if you want to buy in a condo that's not FHA approved and want an FHA loan, we could go and get you an FHA loan. The FHA finally, after 10 years, has loosened up their guidelines to get FHA loans in non-FHA approved buildings, which is a game changer for a lot of people.
56David.com. All your information's right there. I will extend my credit card back to 20 grand.
Please. For me, not for you.
I don't
trust
myself.
Just for my sanity. Did Mike get a haircut yet?
We don't have time to talk about Mike's haircut. I got to go into the little jingle coming up here.
Go hit the jingle.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to Time Out's Morgan Olson in studio. 720 WGN. What's your favorite go-to restaurant in the city? Everybody think about that for a second. Have you tried any new restaurants lately? We all go back to the same ones. I have a list of 48 must-tries in front of me, and joining us from Time Out Chicago is Morgan Olson. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's good to see you, because we correspond on the phone or via email. It's nice to have you in person.
Yeah, always about food.
You had an article, The 48 Best Restaurants in Chicago You Have to Try.
Yes.
Now, how did you come up with this list, and why not 50, why not 45, why not 55, why 48?
Yeah, we don't like to classify or kind of confine ourselves to a specific number just to meet a target. So these are 48 restaurants that I truly love, our staff stands behind, and this list grows and shrinks every year. So it's kind of always in flux every season based on the best new restaurants, the old standbys that we still visit.
Yep.
So yeah, it's always in flux. Right now we've got 48.
48. When did this list start? When did you start it?
Oh, gosh. This list has always existed for Time Out Chicago and across the Time Out global network, but we rebranded it as the Eat List. I guess it was 2 years ago now. So all of our cities across the world, no matter where you are, we've got an Eat List that has, you know, kind of that checklist of must-try restaurants.
Okay, well, let's run through these because people want to try these. Let's run through 40 to 48. What are your favorites?
40 to 48? Oh, my gosh. Can we start with number one?
Well, I'd like to save number one for later. See, it's the buildup.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So number 48 is Split Rail. This is a spot that's in West Town, Ukrainian Village neighborhood, but it's a fried chicken spot from Zoe Shore. And her fried chicken is honestly, I don't think people talk about it enough. It's so, so good. She worked for years and years to perfect this recipe. And it's just kind of that craggy, oil-dappled stuff that you just crave. And her biscuit, too, is just phenomenal. She does this, like, little dollop of maple honey butter on it. It's
what's not to love about that? That is great. What else in the 40s do we have? I'm running through the decades right now just for time.
Yeah.
Purposes.
Okay, perfect. What's another favorite of mine? Okay, one that doesn't usually show up on people's must-try lists, but I personally love, is Brown Bag Seafood. It's one of those Chicago-based companies that's really expanded over the last couple years. They're offering sustainable, reasonably priced seafood that meets a lunch price point. And it's always pristine. It's always phenomenal. It's healthy. And it's just no frills. It's fast food seafood, but it's done so impeccably.
Wow. What's the name of that again?
Brown Bag Seafood. There's actually a location around the corner from you.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah, they're always growing too. So
Morgan Olson is here from Time Out Chicago, the 48 best restaurants in Chicago you have to try. Okay, 30 to 39.
All right.
What are your favorites?
Let's see who's in here. Okay, I'm going to start with Proxy. It's over in West Loop. It's from Chef Andrew Zimmerman, who is also the chef owner behind Sepia. This is just a fun global menu. He opened, I think, 2-3 years ago now. But it's just this hit list of like really unique stuff. He's got this elotes fritter that's really phenomenal. And yeah, they just added a brunch menu to their roster about a year ago. So it's just one of those places that I come back to again and again, especially for celebratory occasions.
Nice. And what is your favorite food?
Oh my gosh. I think probably right now, anything that is Asian inspired or deeply rooted in Asian tradition, like, gets my heart pounding.
Why is that?
I just think there's like so much fascinating Asian cuisine happening in Chicago right now. And it really explores every part of the Asian world. And it's fun. It's exciting. It's different. It's okay. Adventurous. And I think now is the time to be eating Asian food in Chicago.
Nice. Yeah. I like that. I love your passion, Morgan.
Oh, thank you.
We have to flip to 20 to 29. What do we have in the 20s?
Okay.
Your
let's
favorites.
See.
By the way, this is all available online and on my Facebook page if people want to check it out.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a fun one. Okay. So in the 20s, we've got Band of Bohemia, which is this. It's actually Michelin's first starred brew pub in the world. Okay. So they're kind of specializing in, their whole mission was to elevate brew pub food. So it's not just these greasy baskets of fish and chips. It's really fine dining. But at an affordable price point, you can go in, you can do their full tasting menu and ball out. But you can also go in and just order off the a la carte menu and have a phenomenal meal. Be sure to pair it with the beers that are brewed on site.
Yeah.
In Ravenswood.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. They've got this great, like, it's a jasmine rice beer that is really phenomenal and tastes eerily like rice, and it's just funky and fun and different.
It's interesting that you say that, because when you mention these beers out loud, and there's so many different types of craft beers, they sound odd or disgusting, but when you try it, it's like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
Totally. And
yeah.
It works so well with the food. You can even ask your server to do kind of a guided tasting for you and match the food that you're having with beers that they would recommend. And it's fascinating. Even if you're not a beer person, give their beers a try, because they really do some funky stuff there.
The 48 best restaurants in Chicago to try. All right, 10 through 19.
Oh,
what is your favorite? 10 through 19.
Now we're getting into the good stuff. Gosh.
They all sound great, by the way.
Yeah, I've got to give a shout out to one of the newer restaurants that we added to this list. It's called Virtue. It's down in Hyde Park, and it's from owner and chef Eric Williams. So he's really inspired by the Southern experience of cooking. So he's doing everything from these beautiful fried green tomatoes to gumbo to grits to blackened sea fish, blackened catfish, and even a banana pudding. It is probably one of the best meals that I've had this year. It's really, really phenomenal. He's also just the kindest person. He's constantly giving back to the community and building up his team of people who might not have the opportunity to work in, you know, kind of a finer dining restaurant otherwise.
Right.
And it's a really excellent, amazing experience.
You cheer for those guys, don't you?
Absolutely.
You want to come out and support families like that.
Yeah, he's just the kindest person, and it doesn't hurt that he puts out a phenomenal dinner.
Say the name of the restaurant again and the location.
Virtue, and that's in Hyde Park.
Virtue in Hyde Park. Okay, I'm going to take a break, and we're going to run through the top 10. Morgan Olson is here. Where can people follow you on Twitter?
At Morgan C. Olson, but I'm much more active on Instagram.
Instagram. Olsen.
That's correct.
Morgan Olson's here. The 48 best restaurants in Chicago you have to try. The top 10 coming up next on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. In studio with us is Morgan Olson from Time Out Chicago, the 48 best restaurants in Chicago you have to try. And you've been compiling this list for 35 years.
Exactly.
Well, almost. But yes, you put together this list and you help us. That is why you're here.
I try.
All right, the top 10. Let's start at number 9. What do we have?
All right, perfect. So this is a really fun one. Number nine is Birreria Zaragoza, which is down in Archer Heights. It's totally worth a trip if you've never been down there. But they essentially specialize in this Mexican stew that's made with really tender goat meat. And it's a family-run business, and they make the tortillas on site. I cannot say enough good things about the tortillas. Oh. But you can get a phenomenal meal for 2-3 people for under $20 and be totally stuffed. And so happy. It's a very unique traditional Mexican dish done incredibly well.
By the way, number 10 is Virtue, which you mentioned in Hyde Park before we went to a break. Yes. All right. Number 8 on the list.
Number 8 is Entente, and this is from Brian Fisher, Tai Fujimara, and it's my it's one of my favorites because it really kind of dismisses this notion of fine dining being this hoity-toity type of experience. They're really laid back. Their food is definitely still that fine dining, beautiful presentation, but they really bring fun to it. You could show up there in a white t-shirt and jeans and be totally A-OK. I just love that they've dropped the pretension of fine dining.
I love that. Okay, yeah. Good. All right. Number 7.
Is Mitakaya up in Logan Square. So this is, I think, probably one of my favorite newer Mexican restaurants that's opened in the last 5 years. And the chef Diana is really inspired by the food that she grew up eating. Her grandparents cooked for her. Her mother cooked for her. She really tells a story, and you can really feel her devotion to her family, her culture, her tradition through the food that she's making. It's elevated new wave Mexican that's can't miss.
New wave Mexican.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to coin that term.
You do such a good job describing these foods. I feel like I need to stop at these restaurants.
Thank you.
Very, very good. All right. Number 6.
All right. We've got another one up in Logan Square. This one is from Abe Conlin. It's called Fat Rice.
I love it already.
I know. Such a good name, right? Abe just won the James Beard Award for Best Chef in the Midwest.
And by the way, that is a huge deal.
It's huge.
Best Chef in the Midwest, James Beard Awards, right here in Chicago.
Yep.
Huge.
It is. And he's really interesting because he's kind of exploring a couple different cuisines. His stuff is really based in the cuisines of Macau, China, but he also explores the Portuguese-speaking world. So it's funky stuff. He's got this rice dish that is kind of the namesake dish on his menu that's just loaded with seafood, and it's really good and delicious.
Fantastic. All right, number 5.
Number 5 is Alinea. You knew this one would come up at some point.
Right, of course.
I actually moved it down this year in the list just because I think fine dining is changing a little bit in Chicago. That's not to say that Alinea isn't a great restaurant. It's still in the top 5. Tasting menus here are $200 to $400 a person. It's a theatrical experience. For fine dining aficionados, it's a must.
You have to go.
Yeah, it's right. Chicago's only 3 Michelin stars. Restaurant.
Right. Try it at least once.
Yeah.
But you got to save up.
Oh, save for a year.
Yes, save up a lot of money. All right. Number 4.
Number 4 is Giant, which is kind of a funny name because this Logan Square restaurant is incredibly tiny. If I can offer you one piece of advice, it's to book this restaurant far, far, far in advance. Do not just show up there.
Okay.
It's incredibly small. Their seats go very fast. But Jason Vincent is the chef owner there, and he's doing everything from uni shooters to chili glazed short ribs to really phenomenal house-made pastas. It's just a fun experience up in Logan Square.
Nice. The 48 best restaurants in Chicago you have to try. Morgan Olson is here from Time Out Chicago. All right, the top 3 at number 3.
All right, we've got Boca, which I feel like sometimes people forget about because it's been up in Lincoln Park for 15, 16 years now at this point. They've got a longstanding Michelin star, handful of other awards. But Lee Woolen, who's the chef there, is just always changing things up. And I think that even if you went 10 years ago, if you went 5 years ago, go back, rediscover this spot.
It really is
one of the best dining gems in Chicago. It's a truly special spot, and I think it really speaks to what we're doing here in our dining scene.
All right, number 2.
Number 2, one of my personal all-time favorites. This is where I tell people who are visiting from out of town, if they have time to experience just one restaurant and they're kind of, looking for something a bit more casual, go to Avec. cuddle up with the person next to you because it's all kind of communal dining, or grab a seat at the bar. It's Mediterranean skewing Midwestern food. So they've got these phenomenal bacon wrapped dates. They have this focaccia that's stuffed with cheese and truffle that I honestly dream about. And it's just a really special spot. You can also get a bottle of wine for as low as like $20-25,
wow,
which I totally recommend.
Boy, you can wrap anything in bacon and it's going to taste great.
Right.
Right. All right. The number one restaurant.
Okay.
Number one restaurant you have to try here in Chicago.
My number one restaurant right now is Oriole in the West Loop. You know, I think there's a lot of fine dining experiences that you can have in Chicago. I think Oriole is the pinnacle of just a really special dining experience. There are no frills. This restaurant has 28 seats, so you have to book in advance. They've got an 11-course menu right now for just over $200, which I get is a deal breaker for some. But if you're celebrating a special occasion, if you want to have a really phenomenal meal in Chicago, go and try Noah Sandoval's menu at Oriole. It's got some Japanese inflections, but it's really new American. The plates are beautiful, but it's also a casual environment. There isn't a lot of extra frills. There's not hoity-toity staff, you know, there are no
tuxes. I'm all about that. Yes, yeah. I'm all about casual and good food.
Yeah, it's really special. And don't look at the menu before you go. Let it be a surprise. If I can offer you one piece of advice.
Why is that? Because I'm always the guy that looks at the menu.
I am too, but don't do it here.
Why
not?
Let
it be a total surprise because it's so special to just get those dishes in front of you and not know what you're eating.
And how do you spell that?
Oriole. O-R-I-O-L-E.
I-O-L-E. Okay, got it. And I put it on my Facebook page if you want to see the entire list. The 48 best restaurants in Chicago you have to try. Morgan Olson from Time Out Chicago. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. We got to do this again in person.
Yeah,
I love
it. We'll eat next time, too.
It's 720 WGN. All right, we got the Cats tomorrow night. I forgot about that against Ohio State, a rare Friday night game. I have a lot of friends going to that game. Thanks again to Morgan Olson. Love Chicago restaurants. There's so many gems in this city. What's your go-to? Everybody's got a go-to that when they need food right away. What's your go-to?
Need food right away?
What's your go-to? You live right downtown.
Yes, I do. I every single time I leave the city, I want to come back because we have so many amazing places within a 3-mile radius. But my go-to is obviously going to be the place that's like right outside my door, down the block. There's this amazing Cuban restaurant called Cafe Cito. Just easy peasy, cheap food.
Where is that?
That is near the Hancock Building. So there's one there, and there's one in Lincoln Park.
Delaware, Chestnut?
Yeah, yeah, right around there. Great food.
Great. Streeterville.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What's yours? Where do you go to?
We ordered from Leader Bar tonight.
The who?
Leader Bar. It's a bar. Leader Bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sports bar on Irving and I want to say Francisco.
What kind of food can you get from there?
Just bar food, but their pizza is so good.
There's nothing better than
it's
bar
It's so
food.
Good. I love a crisp crust.
Mm-hmm.
It is so good. But Angelo's Wine Bar. I like to give the little guys, the mom and pop restaurants, a plug. Angelo's Wine Bar at Montrose and Sacramento. They have small plates and they have a few big plates, but it's just authentic food. And it's not that expensive. And it's a nice little gem in the city.
Angelo's. I like the name of it, too. Classic Italian.
Family-owned. You want to support the people. You know, you root for people like that.
Do you walk into Angelo's and they're like, oh, it's a Pete. Well, great to see you again.
I think it's the owner or the son's owner. He's always hosting, and I always say hello, and he told me his name, you know, like 6 months ago. I go, what's your name? I'm Pete. You know, this is my wife, Sarah. We love your restaurant. We come in here a lot. And he told me his name, and I can't remember his name. And I'm usually good at names, and it bothers me that I don't know his name.
Yeah, you
so
didn't
I
ask
need
for his
to
phone
ask.
Number?
Well, I need to ask the waiter or waitress the name, because mm-hmm. you always want to have the name of the host or the owner, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, of course, you do. You don't want to walk in there and be like, "Hey, it's great to be here at Angelo's again. It's great to see you, Pete. I've missed you so much. Here's some spaghetti in the corner bar. Thank you, Chief."
Thanks, Chief. That is such
a man.
That is such a cop out when you call somebody Chief. Hey, thanks, buddy. Oh, it's great to see you again, man.
You know what? Somebody called me handsome the other day, and I think it's just
Handsome! What's going on? I hope it was an old man. That's nice.
I accepted it because my last name's Heidemann, so I was just like, you were almost there.
No.
You got it.
They had no idea whatsoever. Being in the restaurant business is tough.
Oh, yeah.
The number one reason that people return to restaurants, we've talked about this before. Do you remember what it is?
I'm guessing it's the personality and the people of the waitresses and waiters.
It is recognition.
Mm.
Being recognized. Hey, Michael, great to see you back. It's Pete. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
hey,
how's your family doing?
Chief.
How's your son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... There's
recognition.
Nothing better.
It's not the food. Service, I think, is number two, and I think food is number three. Recognition.
Yeah.
You want to be recognized. You go back to places that you know.
Well, think about the TV show Cheers. Everyone knows your name.
Right.
Everyone wants their own Cheers. Do you have a Cheers in your life, Pete? Is it Angelo's?
Name about 15 of them. Yes. I go to a lot of bars.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chicago Cut. That's a great spot, too.
Chicago Cut is a great restaurant.
Yeah.
Best steak in the city.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Nothing better.
We need to go sit at the bar and have a drink there.
I would love to. I've been waiting to check out that spot. I haven't been there in a few years.
Do you want to move that thing on the bottom of the screen so I can put the music deal up there? Hey, coming up next after bottom of the hour news, we're going to talk to Jane Lynch. Love Jane Lynch. She was born and bred in Chicago. She comes back to this town all the time. She loves this city. She is hosting Inside the Actor's Studio. Remember that show James Lipton used to host? It was on Bravo. It's moved now to Ovation TV. And this year they're having rotating hosts. And last Sunday it was, hold on a second, I know this, Alec Baldwin. This Sunday it's going to be Jane Lynch. And next Sunday it's going to be somebody different. So we're going to talk to Jane Lynch about that in a few minutes. Love Jane Lynch. Just love her. She's been to the radio station. She's the absolute best. But first, time for news. I don't know what it is with this woman, but I love her. Chicago loves her. Maybe it's because she grew up here and still loves the city. She's now a big star, and she is hosting an episode of one of my favorite shows, Inside the Actor's Studio, this Sunday on Ovation TV. It is Jane Lynch. Jane, how are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. Inside the Actor's Studio. What's your favorite word, Jane?
Oh, that's right. I think I answered it, too. You'll see when you watch it. I forget what I said.
I watched part of the episode. You are interviewing David Oyelowo. Is that how you pronounce it? Because
yes.
I know
that is how you pronounce it.
I know him as an actor. He is so good at everything he does, and it's such a great interview.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that you still have the blue cards like James Lipton used to. And you take questions.
That's right.
You take questions from the audience at the end. I love that. Did you watch any old episodes before you hosted?
Well, not one. I've watched it before, so I didn't have to go back. And I was on it with Glee, right in the beginning of our run, so that would have been almost 10 years ago. I love Mr. Lipton. I think he did such a wonderful job. And as you know, we're doing rotating hosts now. So,
right.
But it's the exact same format because it works. Why mess with what works?
I love James Lipton. This is a true story. About 21 years ago, when I first moved to Chicago back in 98, he was in town. I called up his studio, the Actor's Studio in New York, and he was in the studio the very next day. And what is it with James Lipton, that presence, you know, that very Shakespearean old Hollywood?
Yeah, he's great. I did an episode of Arrested Development, and he was in it as well.
You're
so
kidding.
We got to ride over to the set together. Yeah, this would have been about 15 years ago. We got to ride over to the set together in a van and got to talking. And he loves actors. He loves the process.
Yeah.
I think is evident, but he loves to work. So I was surprised to hear he had retired. I thought he would, you know, probably love doing it and hated retiring.
I can tell actors who've never been trained on stage or improv because they don't command the presence on stage. You are such a strong presence as a host and an actor. Remind me of your background in Chicago. I know you went through Steppenwolf and Second City.
Sure.
Which was first?
Second City was first. And before that, though, I did a bunch of off-loop stuff, as we call it, non-equity theater, a ton of it. And as you know, the non-equity theaters in Chicago are amazing. It's a great training ground for actors, and it's very actor-centered. And then my first paid job on theater job was the Second City Touring Company. And then I started understudying. I understudied the show Stepping Out at Steppenwolf, and from there I ended up doing like 4 or 5 shows.
Now, when you come back to Chicago, do you drive past Second City? Do you drive past Steppenwolf over on Halsted?
I walk. I walk, absolutely. I usually stay in the, nobody drives. I never drove when I lived in Chicago.
Right.
But I usually stay in the Gold Coast. I buy that big new restoration hardware.
Oh, my gosh.
So I walk. I walk to the Chicago Historical Society on North Avenue in Chicago, and then I can walk past Second City. I used to live in Menominee and Queens. So I usually walk by that, and of course, Steppenwolf is now on North and Halsted. Yeah, it's been there probably for 20 years, right? But to me, it's like, oh, it just moved there.
It's interesting that you mentioned that restoration hardware, because right in the middle of the Gold Coast, there's this huge restaurant on the bottom floor, so they want you to get some drinks and walk around and buy expensive furniture.
You can get a drink for sure, but
yes.
Most people are there. It's one of the best restaurants in town, I think, and it's at this place called Three Arts, and it used to be a dormitory for women's art students. So it was dance, dance performance, visual arts, and acting. And they lived there in the dorms, and so Restoration Hardware took control of the building, and they, where the dorms were, actually decked out Restoration Hardware rooms, and they're gorgeous. So
right.
It's fun. It's a great place to spend several hours in the day.
Oh my gosh!
They have great coffee. I'm a coffee drinker. They have the best. They have the best coffee there.
You sound like my wife. Let's go to Restoration Hardware, grab a drink, and just kind of walk around and look at the furniture.
Absolutely. And you can't buy anything there.
No.
You can't like walk away with a bag.
No.
You have to order everything. Even like a little cloth for a desk table or something. You have to order it.
We're talking about Jane Lynch. By the way, inside the Actor's Studio, James Lipton retired last year. An Ovation Network took over the show from Bravo.
Right.
You are hosting. Is it the second episode? Alec Baldwin did last week. You're doing this Sunday coming up.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the 20th. Yeah, this Sunday with David Oyelowo. Yeah, it's terrific. I think you're going to really love our episode because he is a big stage guy. As well as now he's producing his own stuff.
He is so good. You do such a great job with him on the show. I got to ask you about, I have to ask you about Glee. When you first got the part, did you realize that this show was going to blow up? Or when did you find out that, oh my gosh, I'm a household name, this show is huge?
In between the pilot airing and our first episode was about 3 or 4 months, and Twitter had just started to become a thing, and it exploded on Twitter. And that's when I had the feeling that this was going to, and also I knew it was very good. And I knew that musical theater is something that when you have a fan of musical theater, they're usually rabid.
Right.
And I thought we're going to get some great rabid fans, but I didn't know it was going to be as huge as it was. But it became clear in between the airing of the pilot and our first episode.
I don't know why. This is going to sound weird, but I don't know why. But I loved you in Role Models with Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott. That movie, it's so dumb, but it's so funny. I can watch it. It's one of those movies you see on cable and you just kind of get sucked in.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so many great people in that movie. Ken Marino. Of course, I can't think of anybody now because I'm on the spot. But David Wayne directed it. And Ken and Paul were both writers on it.
Right.
So it's a real, real joy to do.
In Hollywood Game Night, which celebrity would you invite over to your house and want to have on your team if you were having a game night at your house?
Yvette Nicole Brown.
Ah.
I think would be the person I'd have over to my house. Absolutely. She's the best player. She's consistent. She's gracious. She knows when to leave. Like, she'll know when it's time to go. I don't have to push her out of my house.
And who has been the worst celebrity on the show on Hollywood Game Night on NBC?
I'm not going to tell you that. But there's a couple of them, and I'm not going to say.
I could name a few, but I won't. When are we going to see you back in the city?
I'm coming back with, I'm doing a Christmas show, a Swinging Little Christmas. We do a tour every year, and we're going back to the City Winery in Chicago. I think it's December 1st. Maybe you can look it up and announce it to our audience in Chicago. And we're also, we've got two area outside of Chicago gigs as well. And if you go to janelynchofficial.com, that's my website. But for sure, we're going to be doing two shows at the City Winery in Chicago, a 5 o'clock and a 9 o'clock. And I believe it's the beginning of December. It's either the 3rd or the 4th, but look it up.
My producer just sent it to me. Jane Lynch, Swingin' Little Christmas, December 15th at City Winery Chicago. How about that?
15th? Oh, my goodness. I got that wrong. Okay, December 15th. There we go.
15th. There you go.
Yeah, please come out for that.
Jane, you're the best. I'll be watching on Sunday on Ovation TV. Jane Lynch hosting an episode of Inside the Actor's Studio at 9 o'clock Chicago time. You are the absolute best. It's great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, too, and we'll see you all soon.
All right. Thanks, Jane. Take care.
You bet. Bye-bye.
It's 720 WGN.
For Pete's sake. Because it points out things that make you shake your head and say, for Pete's sake.
For Pete's sake. This is when we burn through some stories from today. But first of all, Jane Lynch. God, I love her. I love Restoration Hardware. Getting text messages. Have you been to that Restoration Hardware in the Gold Coast?
No, it's legendary, though. Like, everyone wants to go to it. Everyone always talks about it.
They do have a great restaurant there. I've never eaten. I only get drinks. Mm-hmm. Because in order to walk around there, you need some booze. Okay?
You can get booze and then go shopping?
Yes. They want you to get liquored up so you buy a $5,000 couch or whatever it is.
Now it all makes sense. Before, I just thought it was just a restaurant next to a furniture shop.
You're a single guy. There's a lot of hot women that walk through there.
I'm going to be the guy just sitting around with a martini at all times.
There are guys that do that right in the lobby. So you walk in, huge restaurant, coffee bar, and regular bar.
Is it dressed casual or do I need to wear like a suit?
No, you don't have to wear a suit. I mean, some people, again, some people do. They make it a... You know, it's a destination.
Wow.
It is.
I had no idea what was going on with that, but when I heard Jane talk about it, now I need to go and check it out.
You got to check it out.
Because we had Morgan on before, and now I think I'm going to add that to my list of restaurants I need to go to.
Morgan from Time Out Chicago. Happy birthday to Suzanne Summers. She turned 73 today. She posted a picture on Instagram in a field, sitting down in her birthday suit. So as a public service to everyone listening right now, I checked out the picture for research purposes, and she is still a knockout at 73.
That was nice of you. Thanks for doing that for me.
Well, you know, it's the least I could do. Suzanne Summers in her birthday suit on her Instagram.
I have a question. Do you ever think that there's going to be a time when the roles will be reversed and the man in his 80th birthday will lay in the field in his birthday suit?
Because no one wants to see a naked man. Nobody.
Not even the man, most of the time.
No. You don't want to even look at yourself in a mirror.
I shudder in fear. I go in there with my bathing suit on, never take it off.
Employees tend to ignore 40% of the emails they receive every single day. Everybody think about it. We get so many emails. How many emails are you ignoring? The average person per day gets 180 emails.
The average person?
The average person gets 180 emails. How many emails did you get today? When I wake up in the morning, I easily have 30 emails.
Yeah.
New York Times, New York Post, Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times. There's four right there.
I have 5 email accounts, and like all of them, I probably get 160 emails by the time I wake up. So tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., I'll get 160.
Let's say 180. So 40%, 72 of those emails you're not even looking at. You're ignoring them.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's just a bunch of spam.
Yeah, but there are also people at work and some other people that you know that are going to send you an email, and you delete it right away.
Yes, I'm talking about spam.
Gone. Absolutely gone.
Well, it's there's just so much. It's overwhelming. I mean, because now I'm at this routine of Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all opening. That's the first thing I do. And
yep.
These little like pellets that I get to eat when I wake up. And then the only thing I have left over is just rifling through those emails.
Are you Arthur Fonzarelli on Snapchat too?
No, I'm not on. I have no idea what. I think I'm Michael J. Foxy on Snapchat.
Because I'm going to send you a Snapchat before the end of the show.
Okay, thank you.
At Pete McMurray. Everything.
Please,
everything's
got to
be uniform. So, Pete McMurray on Facebook, at Pete McMurray on Twitter, at Pete McMurray on Instagram. Trying to get Instagram followers. So, if you could follow me, thank you.
You're a good follow, too, just like John. Just like John Vincent.
Pete McMurray. I haven't posted this week. I gotta up my game. I've been too busy.
Man. Why? What's going on? You're just too busy? You can't post on the
grid? Listen, I got 180 emails a day, and I have to ignore 40% of those. By the way, out of those 180, 51% of those emails you receive are group emails.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to ignore those anyway.
Do you remember the forward chain emails you used to get back in the day?
Oh, my God. My cousin used to send 10 a day.
A day?
10. I am not kidding. I just had to pass this along. It was so motivational.
And you scroll down and it always be like those
arrows
pointing up. It was so
dumb.
Ugh,
so I banned her. I blocked her on my email.
That
was 5 years ago easily.
That would be a good survey too. How many of your family members have you blocked on email?
I block people every day. All the time. Block their phone numbers. I don't really have a problem blocking people. Every former boss that I hated, blocked. All of them. Facebook, Instagram, on my phone. You can't get a hold of me.
Because they were trying to send you like the Nubian princess emails or something?
Whatever. They just bugged me. Eddie Van Halen. Did you hear about this? He has cancer again?
Oh,
Eddie
man.
Van Halen's theory that he contracted cancer by putting metal picks in his mouth. He thinks that he contracted cancer by chewing on a metal pick. I use metal picks. They're brass and copper, which I always held in my mouth in the exact place where I got tongue cancer, Van Halen said. Plus, I basically live in a recording studio that's filled with electromagnetic energy. So that's one theory. I mean, I was smoking and doing drugs and a lot of everything else, but at the same time, I had that pick in my mouth. Dr. Tom Micklewright, the medical officer at the British Medical Consultation Service, told Insider, this article, that Van Halen's health issues were likely not caused by a guitar pick. In an interview published Monday, Micklewright cited the fact that neither copper nor the metals found in brass are considered carcinogenic by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Eddie is seeking treatment in Britain for his cancer.
What an interesting way and reason to blame. It's a wood or metal pick. First of all, who is using wood or metal picks? There's plastic for a reason.
I don't understand it.
Did he learn the guitar like before World War II or something like that?
I don't know.
It makes no sense. And then like hearing that the electromagnetic magnetic waves that he lives in, I think he's just losing it, man. I think he's just losing
it. He lost it a long time ago. I love the guy. I think he's just a phenomenal guitar player, but he's lost his mind.
Yeah, he's
lost it.
One of the greatest guitar players of all time.
Who's your favorite rock star right now?
Eddie Van Halen. Oh, shoot.
Who is your favorite?
Right now, it'd have to be...
You mentioned him earlier.
Okay. Mick Fleetwood?
No. Dave Grohl.
Oh, Dave Grohl, yes.
You mentioned Dave Grohl.
He's in the top 10 at least. Yeah, he's amazing.
Dave Grohl is set to show up during an episode of Sesame Street's Milestone 50th season, which premieres November 16th on HBO.
Wow.
Sesame Street moved to HBO. Dave Grohl's going to be on an episode.
So is he going to, like you said, is he going to be swearing the whole time? Is it going to be an episode on being friendly?
Dave, I love you. You're fantastic. You're one of my favorites. I'm not a prude, but sometimes you got to just dial it back a little bit. That's all.
He likes to be crass. Is it going to be a puppet or is it going to be him as Dave Grohl? I'm guessing it's going to be him.
Guess you have to tune in.
Ooh.
Set your DVR. What was the last time you watched Sesame Street? 74? 1975?
Yeah, back when it was not so PC, probably when I was about 4 or 5 years old.
I know you weren't born in the 70s, but that's when it was Gordon and Bob. I think Bob was a drunk. Right?
He was? He was a puppet?
No. They have humans on Sesame Street.
Oh, okay.
There's Gordon. Snuffleupagus, Big Bird, Elmo, Oscar the Grouch.
Uh-huh. And Gordon the drunk? Wait a minute. I have to Wikipedia
Gordon was a drinker. I'm losing my voice tonight. I don't know what's going on here.
How many wood picks did you just put in your mouth?
Oh, man. One third of Americans have ended relationships over household chores. A third surveyed American adults have ended a relationship due to conflicts over chores.
Gladly.
Wow.
Have you had that issue in your relationships, Pete?
I dated a girl that was a complete slob, and I broke up with her because I just couldn't take it anymore. I go, I'm a man. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be a slob, and you're just filthy. It's disgusting. Really.
Oh, yeah. There becomes a breaking point when you're doing the 15th dish and she's still lying on the couch or he's still lying on the couch. And you're like, all right, it's game over.
The survey found that 70% of participants would consider dating or marrying someone they found untidy. They wouldn't consider dating or marrying someone they found untidy.
Yes.
Would you marry a slob?
No way, Jose. I'm very OCD. My whole apartment, in fact, I'm doing a garbage-free zone. I don't have a garbage can in my apartment. I have a bag that I throw garbage in, and then that afternoon, I take it out. No garbage. So that would
get that garbage out of my house.
Me and Oscar the Grouch have a lot in common when it comes to being tidy.
Got that girl I dated that was a slob. She, instead of curtains on her windows, she had towels.
No.
Yeah,
way.
And they were so dusty. I'm like, I've had it with you. I mean, you're a great person and all, but you're filthy. It's over.
Towels is for curtains. What did she use for towels? Just like newspaper, old newspapers. You wrote the comic section.
That's why I broke up. It was over. She never cleaned her bathroom.
Ugh.
All right. That does it for us. Thank you so much for hanging out tonight. Nick is up next. Thanks again to Jane Lynch, Love Jane, Johnny Vincent. All the podcasts are going to be up at the website at WGNradio.com. Who else did we have on the show? I can't even remember. Oh, Paul Vallis kicked it off today. Mm-hmm. Former head of the Chicago Public Schools. Paul had a lot to say about the union. And if you missed that, it's on our website at WGNradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Pete McMurray. You guys make sure you have a great weekend. We got a Bear game Sunday against the Saints. We got to win this one. We're 3-2. It's going to be tough.